Black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 17, Hawkeye State, Oops Pal, joined by the one, the only, the man who needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway, Orson Swindle, Spencer Hall of SB Nation, of Every Day Should Be Saturday, the granddaddy of them all. What's going on?
Pleasure to be with you tonight, gentlemen. Absolute goddamn pleasure.
We're going to discuss Big Ten Bowls. We're going to discuss a little bit of Heisman postmortem. I wanted to get Swindle's thoughts on the Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee trade.
Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah, seriously, could not pick either out of a lineup.
Yeah. I know your feelings on baseball.
Yeah, they're intense and antipathetic.
Yes, indeed.
Because it's a ladies' game for ladies. Played by the dumbest athletes in professional sports.
Hey, don't call Rosie O'Donnell one of the dumbest athletes in professional sports.
You know, really, she's a disappointed fullback. I hate to fight that man.
She's the Jim Kleinsaucer of daytime television.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Jim Kleinsaucer's still working on that pilot.
Oh, all right. So, Big Ten Bowls. Big Ten starts late this year because apparently the Alamo Bowl is worthy of January status now.
January 2nd, even. It's better than the New Year's Day Bowls. All
it's technically better than the Rose Bowl.
Isn't that what the Big Ten needs, is an even longer layoff, right? Yeah. Can we push this into 2011? That would be great.
Well, it's especially good for Michigan State, because by the time they get to January 2nd, the entire team might be suspended.
That's true. You know, considering, you know, they I love that they decided, you know, that the Storm the Dorm segment that, you know, Rob Gilmore and Joe Tessitore do on ESPN was quite literal.
Right. You're like, they're on to something here.
You know, they storm the dorm. They get guns. They start hitting people randomly, but while wearing ties. Remember that. All wearing ties.
Right. That's right.
So they're going to have a full week after Christmas. I mean, they're going to run the whole gamut of holidays for which you hold parties. And that means, you know, excuses galore to just beat the hell out of random students. This is going to be – we'll see if they can even field a starting lineup by the second.
Please remember, this is also in San Antonio. San Antonio is – it's got some sketch. It's a major pipeline for steroids. It's very close to the Mexican border. I don't see anything good – or how's this? I don't see anything unentertaining happening here.
WWE legend Shawn Michaels could be involved in some way.
Sure, he could be involved in some way. We could absolutely have we could have some federales chasing Michigan State players across the border.
That would be the greatest of all time.
Yeah, exactly. Mark D'Antonio sitting there going, you know, discipline's very important on my team. I make them do all sorts of things like only write letters on lazy stationery. Always sending thank you notes. You know, the sort of things that really make a man.
We could have, like, Michigan State, Florida State, and end up with, like, eight-man football.
Yeah. Right. The six-on-six.
That's right. You know,
this wouldn't work unless they weren't facing Texas Tech. Leach would be all over this. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, listen. Here, I'm going to scrap the blocking scheme. We'll only use three guys ready to go. D'Antonio, it would take him months to figure this out. He's from that stodgy, really slow, glacial Ohio State school of coaching where they're like, whoa, hold on a second there. Are the Sox going to mid-calf or are they going to the knee? Because I need to know what for here, because if they go to the knee, then that's going to be a change of the dress code. And here we put the Sox at the calf. And if the calf – and it just keeps going on and on and on like that.
Hey, you're talking to two guys for the proponents of one of the greatest of ultra-conservative programs, so – check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Oh, listen, you guys know Iowa has at least a little bit of quirk. You had Hayden Fry, you know, so you've had to recruit all sorts of oddballs to Iowa, and you have to do things a bit more, you know, creatively in some senses than other Big Ten schools. So really, pat yourselves on the back for at least being interesting.
Well, we had Hayden, and then after Hayden left, we had to make up for it by bringing in City Boys Inc.
Still the greatest story ever told.
All right, so Big Ten Bowl season kicks off December 29th, the Champ Sports Bowl in lovely scenic Orlando, Florida. The Miami of Florida Hurricanes, a.k.a. the U, will take on the Wisconsin Badgers in one of the great dichotomy games of all of bowl season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real shame that you guys are going to be overshadowed by the Eagle Bank Bowl live from RFK Stadium in downtown D.C. on December 29th.
That would be agony.
That's only because Neuheisel's involved.
That game's going to suck all the air out of the room, steal all the thunder, and you guys will be left with the Trek. The only team that I think could really, you know, Riverside them in terms of being a polar opposite from the Miami squad is BYU. Cause I mean, Wisconsin? The mean streets of, you know, Waukegan. That's who's paired up against Miami. Also, just on an actual football note, this seems like a really bad matchup for Wisconsin. Really bad matchup because Miami only improved, I think, they started fast against inferior competition. They had a little bit of a dip, and then they gradually sort of got their mojo back and finished strong. I don't think that's a good match for a Wisconsin team that I don't think's really been challenged this year.
Well, and every time Wisconsin's been challenged, they've collapsed in one way or another.
Right, collapsed, or they almost lost to, you know, Fresno State, if you remember early on. You know,
absolutely.
They nearly coughed up a game to them. I'm willing to bet just that at every single skill position, they're going to be slower than Miami. And this is really also, Miami's not far from Orlando. If you get out a map, you can learn that. They're really not that far. Wisconsin is a real long way from Miami. The distractions in terms of being in Orlando and actually being a college kid who's like, ooh, hotel room. You're like, if you give a college kid a hotel room, you don't have to do anything else, right? You're just like, and watch the magic happen, you know?
Burn. Well, yeah, but it's going to be a hotel room at like Disney World Resort in Epcot. I think they'll probably be all right. There's not a whole lot of trouble out there.
Oh, no, au contraire. Au contraire.
That sounds like a dare.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's even better because you're like, listen, I'm high as hell. And the soap, it's looking back at me because it's Mickey. I mean, it's like everything is so Disney-fied that if you're into anything illicit at all, it's 10 times better because it's happening in a Disney hotel room.
But isn't it still early enough that it's in that like group of bowls where regardless of who's a better team, the team that's going to win is the only one of the two that actually gives a shit? Like,
Wisconsin has that advantage here clearly because Miami, though talented, they're hard to rouse. like, and they're very inconsistent and young, and you can still tell this because they beat the dog off of Georgia Tech, who beat the dog off of them the year before. And then immediately after that game, they go to Virginia Tech and they just shit the bed.
They sucked hard.
So that's kind of the team that they are. So if Miami doesn't care, yeah, Wisconsin's got a good chance.
Yeah, I'm with you on the first point, though. Wisconsin's played, I think, three legitimate teams all year and gotten relatively trounced by all three of them. You said that Miami's skill position players were faster than all of Wisconsin's. Iowa's were faster than all of Wisconsin. So Miami's going to have a significant advantage there. I can't imagine they keep it close.
Yeah, if Miami cares and if they really sort of, you know, begin to open up the throttle on a fast start, then this is going to get out of hand very quickly.
December 31, Hate Bowl. I love this game so much. Minnesota, Iowa State.
It's perfect, really. And also it's being broadcast on the NFL Network.
Right.
Which is amazing because neither team has anybody that's going to the NFL.
Yeah, that's true. It has no NFL talent going to either one. And I picked Iowa State, in this game, and I'm not sure why. I think I flipped a coin. I can't really make an intelligent choice between either of these teams.
Well,
they're
both awful.
They're both, yeah, this is, if you want, like, you know, hi, I'm cliched columnist. What's wrong with the bowl system? You know, fingers pointing right to the insight bowl. Like, big, target, you know, man wearing stakes running through a tiger habitat screaming, please tackle my obviousness. The Insight Bowl with Minnesota and Iowa State. Where even somebody who watches a lot of football, like the three of us, looks at it and goes, what?
Well, this game really comes down to how you like your coaching. Either you could be damn proud of your team, or your team could play their guts out. If you're damn proud of your team, it's the clones all the way. And if you want your team to play their guts out, then take Tim Brewster, his hot chili, and the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
I took Iowa State in this game, and I think it was just based more on the gut instinct that that Iowa State, though they have no talent whatsoever, was going to play harder because this bowl means more to them. And I actually had to rely on a terrible emotional argument for this game because, seriously, it's a push up and down the line.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The only reason I like Minnesota here is that Iowa State's wins are of the most extreme fluke variety all year. I mean, when you get 8 turnovers from Nebraska and win by 2 points,
it's a fluke.
It's an absolute fluke.
That's called like every Saturday for Nebraska, though. That was kind of their season, right?
You know, I was in Omaha about 3 weeks ago during the Colorado game, and that game was completely bizarre, too. But The Nebraska fans are just so used to it being batshit crazy every weekend that they've kind of come to just accept it. Like, there wasn't even that much outrage over the whole Texas fiasco with zero on the clocks. Once they got past like the first 15 minutes of screaming at their televisions, everybody kind of calmed down and said, that's just the way it's going to be this year.
I kind of like to think of them as like the, you know, they are kind of the displaced royalty who realized that they were running the treasury dry karma-wise, right? And winning so much during the 90s. And now they fully understand the absurdity of the royal scam that is college football and life, right? They're like, yeah, we were really successful and lucky. We didn't appreciate it all, blew all the cash, and now this is just kind of how things are, you know? Somebody threw us a chicken bone out of the taxi. Woo, lunch today! That's how the vagabonds of the street live, you know? So I think they're kind of just happy with that now for the moment.
Put that chicken bone in a pot of hot water and get a stew going. But
Get yourself a stew going.
But, you know, the sad part for Nebraska is they used to be able to blame Tom Osborne for all the kind of gross incompetence late in games. Now they don't have that anymore. Now it's just like the refs are screwing them is what they think. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Minnesota here, but I'll do it grudgingly. I really want to take, like, Al-Qaeda. But I don't have much of a choice.
I put $40 on Sinkhole. And I'm just crossing my fingers.
Now we get to the January 1 Bulls. The first one up, Northwestern, who jumped Wisconsin for shame, gets an Outback Bowl bid against the Auburn Tigers of Gene Chizik. This one makes absolutely no sense to me. I have no idea what's going to happen here. Northwestern's played pretty good football for the second half of the season, but they are still just Northwestern.
I picked Auburn in this game, and that's because I'm shamelessly regionally biased, but because Auburn really does, even with Chris Todd at quarterback, and this is quasi-exotic to you being Big Ten fans, but you should know that Auburn just has this tradition of cloning the same quarterback and using him under a different name and jersey. He's kind of this like rag-armed white dude, and there's always something wrong with him, like he has genetically weak Achilles tendons, or he has Graves disease, you know, or... You know, he's colorblind, but only in one eye. There's always something kind of half wrong with these guys. In Chris Todd's case, you know, the variation that they use in the press guide, because he's just the same guy, right, is that, oh, yeah, well, you know, he's got kind of a perpetually injured and weak shoulder in his throwing arm. Right? Which, you know, that's not good if your job is to throw the ball. But even then, they've somehow made chicken salad from chicken shit this year, and Auburn's had a better year than I think people. I thought they were like a 5-win team, and to see them in the Outback Bowl is stunning, but a testament to, I think, how well Gus Malzahn ran that offense for much of the year. The good news for Northwestern is that Auburn's defense is terribly coached, and if they do anything vaguely tricky at all, they're going to manage to move the ball on them. But I picked Auburn just because predominance of talent across the board. Also, they really haven't seen anything like what Gus Malzahn does on the field. It's pretty funky when you see it, and it's very hard to prepare for.
The way you phrase that makes it sound like he dances around in like assless chaps or something.
It's funky.
He's got some rhythm,
it's
but this is disgusting. No.
Exactly. It's like seeing a Bob Fosse dance number for the first time. You're like, wow, the blatant homoerotic energy of this piece both challenges my assumptions of what masculine dance can be and kind of, it's kind of gross too, you know?
I don't know what the hell's going on anymore.
This is horrible.
I'll take Northwestern here and I'll tell you why. Auburn is imploding before our very eyes. And Northwestern is on the rise, and I'll go ahead and take the trajectory, even if there is like a 6-week layoff in between Northwestern's last game and when they next play. They get this strange kind of 2-quarterback thing going now at Northwestern that somehow seems to be working. Kafka should heal up okay before that game starts, and I don't trust Gene Tissick, especially when most of his wins are against clearly subpar competition.
I still have to pick Auburn, though, because it's not really a rational, reasonable argument. But I'm just not ready for a world where Northwestern doesn't get the living bejesus beaten out of them in their one bowl every 3 or 4 years. Like if they go to the Outback and win, it's not even the same America that I knew and grew up in, you know.
I will also remind you, who did Northwestern really beat?
Iowa. Thank you very much.
They beat Iowa after they called what play?
After they called the chop down the quarterback and grab his face mask play. That was
exactly. They called the maim your quarterback and thus do what you cannot take at Iowa, which is after I scrape off the initial layer of talent. And then I injure that second layer of talent, and then I get to the third because somehow this happens to Iowa. Whatever ill star this program was born under that just makes running backs' ACLs fly off of their knee. Right? That's what happened to you. You were riding it. You were riding a razor-thin edge of probability, and you finally fell on the blade. That's all that happened there, okay? Otherwise, who do they beat? They barely beat Illinois. That's a loss. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a functional L.
That is a loss.
That's
Illinois is a terrible football team with a terrible coach who should probably burst into flame for what he's done. All right.
Hey, he took him to a Rose Bowl.
He took him to a Rose Bowl against Pete Carroll, and then laughter ensued.
That was one of the most satisfying Rose Bowls I've ever seen.
I always relive this moment. But please share it with me. The special moment when Ray Maluga lines up across from Juice Williams when he's standing there and he's lined up right over the center going, I'm about to blitz and destroy you. And everyone knows what's going to happen and no one calls timeout. No one makes a blocking adjustment. No one does anything. You're just like, wow, Ron Zook is the guy who, when the car crash is happening, presses the gas down.
Pretty much.
Yeah, who else did Northwestern beat, by the way? They beat Miami, Ohio. They beat Purdue. They beat Wisconsin. All right, they beat a maimed Iowa team, and they beat Indiana. All right, and
Indiana was feisty, man. Come on.
Sure. Tennessee was pretty feisty, and Auburn beat them.
Tennessee was another one of the 9-7-5 teams in the SEC.
Yes, which normally I would call mediocrity if this were we were talking about the Big Ten. But I'll call it, I think it was competitive parity. That's where
there you go.
Yeah, SEC. That's it.
I will give them credit for the Mississippi win. Begrudgingly.
Yeah, begrudgingly though, really, you want to talk about a team that will suffer an aneurysm and begin flailing meaninglessly in front of you just for your pleasure. Ole Miss with that team this year.
All right, second game on New Year's Day, the noon kickoff of the Cap One Bowl, Penn State LSU. Swindle, what do you think?
I really don't like this game in terms of a pick'em at all because you're talking about a team whose offense folded whenever challenged versus a team whose offense folded whenever challenged. I mean, this really, you want to talk about an error-prone game? This could be a really error-prone game. And I was leaning initially towards LSU in this game, but I think this is one that I think the Big Ten can pull out because LSU was so very wretched on offense and made so many mistakes. And when they did have plays, it's amazing. Have you ever watched Gary Croton call a game?
I've watched LSU football, but usually at that point at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, you know, I've already, cause Iowa always plays at 11 in the morning. So like I'm already like waist deep in football at that point and things and details start flying straight past me.
Okay. Let me do this. All you need to know is that it's kind of like a French absurdist play. It's kind of a, or maybe not even that, just sort of a random series of calls. And if something works, you're like, well, you would call something again based on that, right? And that's what the protagonist expects. But then the cruel god, you know, indifferently hangs him out there, right? And the LSU fan is like, why don't you call that reverse again? They're over-pursuing, and it'd be really good to run something off that, and they never do. I mean, they're terrible. I know Darryl Clark is just a paper bag with legs. But
yeah,
that may be enough to beat this LSU team.
Well, I hang my hat on Penn State for one reason. The last time I saw LSU play in the Cap One Bowl, they might have played it since then, but I don't think they have, some kind of ridiculously blatant clock mismanagement from the other team, which means that LSU's due for it, especially when Les Miles is involved. So I'm going to go ahead and just assume that Penn State wins this one close because Les has them running a draw play with 2 seconds left in the fourth quarter, down by 3.
Not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't even want to pick the winner of this one because you could see a scenario where it's like, yeah, you know, they should have won, but giving up those 3 defensive touchdowns just totally wrecked their chances. And you could plausibly say that about either team in this game. So I guess it's going to be Penn State, but if Darryl Clark just starts throwing the ball 40 rows deep at the fans just out of nowhere, it would be totally expected, and I wouldn't even raise an eyebrow. I'd be like, yeah, that's happened already twice this year. Why not a third time?
All right, 3:30 on New Year's Day, the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. Ohio State goes in for their annual thrashing this year against Oregon. Orson, what are your thoughts on this one?
I'd like to remind you, by the way, that this is the Rose Bowl game presented by Citi because
right. Thank you.
That defames and debases the name of the Rose Bowl, which I'm all for. In the words of James Carville, I hate the Rose Bowl. Yeah, this terrible, awful obstruction to the progress of college football features Ohio State and Oregon. This also features an Oregon defense this is kind of a very awkward matchup for Ohio State because it's like, I remember one time you mentioned that you felt like you had won a game by holding up a bank with a banana, right?
Mm-hmm. With the word gun written on the side.
Yeah, with the word gun written on the side. That's kind of what Oregon's defense is here. And it may be enough to scare Ohio State off of a potential robbery because I don't think offensively they're going to be able to take advantage. Ohio State fans all cite, oh, well, you know, I mean, Stanford ran all over them. If Stanford can do it, you're sure that, you know, ISO University can do it. You're like, all right. They had Toby Gerhart and they had an excellent offensive game plan and they had Andrew Luck passing behind that. It's not this Ohio State offense. You know, you can stop this offense even with a pretty average Oregon defense. And on the other side of the ball, it's not really a good matchup for them, especially because they've had so much trouble covering people in space. And that's what Oregon really likes to do. They like to get the ball on the outside. They like to pitch. They like to run the zone read. They've got 2 guys, at least, if you don't count, you know, swinging LeGarrette Blount in this mix, which he's going to be playing in the bowl game, all right? They've got a backfield burly enough to you know, really run out some tough yardage against the Ohio State defense. And strategically, I just trust Oregon to pull this off a lot more than I do Ohio State, because whatever they do before bowl games against, you know, spread teams that they don't have a lot of playing experience against, it doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Initially, I thought Ohio State had a chance in this game, but the more I look at it, I think you're right, especially on the fact that Ohio State's defense, while very good between the tackles, has been relatively awful when tested to the outside. The only reason I give Ohio State any chance at all is that after watching the Oregon State game, Oregon's defense missed the day they taught tackling at tackling school. I have never seen a defense on a conference champion team fail to make even the simplest stops like they have. But I think that offense wins out in the end, and Tressel would find a way to limit his offense to 21 points against any defense, let alone this one. So,
right. If you say, like, even if you say this game comes down to a shootout, right? Even if you say, okay, Oregon doesn't stop Ohio State, who do you trust more in a shootout?
Oh yeah, it's Oregon.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Ohio State would get above 30 points and not know what to do with themselves.
They're like, the game's over now, right?
They'd start running that old glitch in Madden 2007-ish where they start throwing it backwards.
Yeah, or they would...
the Aaron Brooks glitch?
Yeah, the Aaron Brooks glitch.
Or they would just look at the scoreboard and go, hold on a second. And that four would roll over if they scored more than 40, and they'd be like, no way!
I only heard about this in books. This happens? I get the feeling that Ohio State fans are going to, you know, spend the next month or so talking about how this is one of their best defenses ever. And then when the game starts and Jeremiah Masoli just runs around and through them, that they're going to end up looking like some of the dead people in that one, The Ring, you know, where their eyes are basically burnt out and they're in these frozen screams and shit.
Yeah.
And then the second quarter starts, and it's already
3-1 to nothing. All right, January 2nd, because it's the second most important bowl game that the Big Ten plays this year. Michigan State, Texas Tech. Now, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I imagine if you combine the two, like if you combine Michigan State's propensity for raiding buildings and, like, assaulting people with Texas Tech's love of piratry, does anybody else remember the scene at the beginning of The Life of Brian, like the prologue scene where they have the pirates who raid the office building?
Oh, you're conflating it. Yeah, this is with the meaning of life, right?
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Sorry.
Literally, like the corporate pirates. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's what we would have. Mike Leach would have his players like raiding buildings, stealing PowerPoints. It would be brilliant. But for the actual football, Michigan State has no chance of winning this game.
No, they don't.
No.
They really don't, especially if Mike Leach sends out Nick and not Taylor Potts. I don't know if you know this, but Taylor Potts really did come out in a jersey that just said Nick on the back. That's Taylor Potts' alter ego is Nick. And when Nick played... When Nick played, he had a hell of a game. I can't remember who it was against, but it worked so well, they just decided to keep the bastard out there. So you'll know that Michigan State is, you know, twice baked and double fried if Nick takes the field that day. I'm not making this up.
You know, and the other thing for that game is that Texas Tech has a strange ability, mostly because it's relatively local, to pack about 70% of that stadium, even if nobody is there for anything more than a game day. When Iowa went down there and played them in 01, it was a big game for Iowa because we hadn't been to a bowl game in 4 years. And despite the massive traveling contingent that Iowa usually brings, it was still a large majority putting the guns up. So I expect nothing less from them, even after a slight dip from the season before.
Oh, they're drunk and nasty, too. Man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're mean. We got them on top of our RV playing beer pong. It was fun. Like only two people fell off.
Oh, that's a successful day.
Yeah. All right. Well, and with that out of the way, we come to the big one. Iowa, Georgia Tech, catch the fever. It's the Orange Bowl presented by, I'm guessing, FedEx. Is that right?
This would be the FedEx
Orange Bowl. There we go.
It's the FedEx Orange Bowl.
I don't know what to think about this game just yet. Tell you the God's honest truth. I would normally say Iowa, but I keep reading graphs and charts over at the Georgia Tech blog, and while confused by them, they make me think that we're not very good.
Now, who will be your starting running back for this game? If you tell me that, and you're starting quarterback, I can tell you who's going to win this game.
Stansy and Robinson, they'll be back to full strength, and they say Richardson's going to play guard again too. So they'll be back to 100% across pretty much the entire offense.
All right, you got to. I'd say that's even money at that point. You're doing okay because Georgia Tech, quite literally, has no defense. They take the field with nobody, and they let you run one play and you score, and then they get the ball back.
That's not they score in three plays.
Yeah, that's not. Iowa manages to take three or four plays and get down the field and do it. But yeah, they're terrible defensively. They're really, really bad. And along the lines, you're going to be able to push them around offensively. And with that, Iowa should be able to manage at least the 11 points needed for victory, as specified by Ed Podolak. However, what you won't be able to do is you won't be able to stop their offense because it's just a matter of time before he figures something out. And that he being is Paul Johnson. He'll figure out what you're not covering. He'll figure out how to tweak the blocks. And they will start moving the ball on you. They will. And I don't think you're going to see a repeat of what you saw in the Peach Bowl last year when Georgia Tech flopped against LSU. That was a team that was woefully undersized up front. Now they've gotten a lot better, a lot bigger, but they've gotten a lot faster, and their blocking's gotten a lot better. In addition to that, Nesbitt knows what to read in the defense and the emergence of the occasional. They don't need to pass. They need to pass like 10 times a game. It's like when you really want to piss somebody off in Xbox, right? And you just run the ball like 50 times that game and you only pass 10 times. That's what Paul Johnson does every time because he's a dick. But he's a really good coach, but he's also a dick who's like, I don't want you to have the ball. But Demaryius Thomas, if you don't know, he had a 1,000-yard receiving season. 46 receptions, 1,154 was the yard count. And he had 8 TDs. He's big. He's very, very nasty. A very difficult receiver if you can get him in single coverage, which is all they do. They get everybody, scoot you up in the box, run single coverage, and every now and then he'll just heave one down the field. They really only run, a few pass routes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically throw it deep.
They run throw it deep. They run a comeback. They run a couple of seams off those wing backs. They'll send those guys out and throw the B back as they call it. Who most of the civilized world calls that a fullback, but in his system it's a B back. They'll run that to the flat, and that's it. They run one or two. They run like two screens that I've seen, and every now and then they will call one play that you haven't seen, and the variance is what gets you. Like against Georgia they ran a draw. Which I hadn't seen a draw out of that offense because, it says you're passing, right? Well, they ran like one draw all year long. And it went for a TD. It went like 30 yards for TD because the defense was like, what? I've never seen that on film from y'all. It implies that you pass. So this is a very long answer to just saying that the rushing attack's nasty. They'll find the seams. They're going to get points on you. The key will be maintaining long drives, keeping them off the field, and scoring enough points to win, which I think Iowa, if everyone's back full speed, like you say, then, put your money down. It's not bad.
Yeah, I that's what worries me most of all, though, is that it's not very hard to really figure out what Iowa does, especially defensively, where essentially they run the same package, same play, 80% of the time with subtle variations depending on what's going on around them.
Well, another point of concern is that the real strength of your team is in pass coverage.
Right.
Yeah.
No, teams have ran on Iowa this year. I mean, Ohio State racked up insane amount of yardage on them on the ground. They essentially decided they weren't going to let Terrell Pryor even throw the ball. And
if you think Tressel didn't want to throw the ball.
Yeah.
You haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, that's what worries me more than anything else. You really can run the ball in Iowa this year. They've been great against the pass, but the run defense has been, I wouldn't say marginal, but not nearly as good as we're used to. And the other part of that being that, the good news is that Stansy's back. The bad news is that Stansy's back. If your goal is really to keep long drives going, having somebody who will inexplicably throw a pass to really anybody on the field at any given moment doesn't usually bode well.
Yeah, that's the real problem about this Iowa offense is every now and then they'll be like, okay, third quarter, nothing but three and outs or turnovers. One of the two. And like, it's always at like the worst possible time. Like they just gave up a really demoralizing touchdown. how about we keep the ball for two plays and then maybe punt it 5 yards? Let's see what happens next. But somehow they end up winning out of all that at the same time. But I'm a little worried that if the goal is to stay on the field for as long as possible and Ricky Stanzi's job is to do that, that Kirk Ferentz is probably going to end up like bursting into flames at some point just out of pure anger.
Well, if that is, yeah, I always want to know what team had the longest time of possession. It's actually not Tech a lot of the time. Tech scores so quickly when they do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, I mean, really what they do is jailbreak. So it's like 2 yards, 3 yards, you know, 7 yards, negative one, you know, two, and then you see 70. Right? They're trying to find a seam, and when they do, it goes. And it's not just from Dwyer, and it's not just from Nesbitt. You know, you have Embry Peoples, you have Roddy Jones, not in that order. You have Anthony Allen. Anthony Allen, by the way, when you watch him run, he is one of the weirdest looking running backs because he runs flat footed. He's this huge guy. When he gets the ball, his foot strikes like a cartoon, like straight with the ground. It's really odd to watch. Hopefully for you guys, you'll be seeing him run 2 or 3 yards before that happens and not at his full glory, braids flying in the air, hitting 70 yards on a TD for him. But they're all really talented runners. And when they get it, you know, this isn't a team that's going to give up on the run because that's not an option. No pun intended.
We'll throw the horns in there. Well, we are way over time. And so we'll shelve the Heisman talk for next time. But, wanted to, thank Orson for coming in on short notice and helping us out and, remind all of our readers that he's at SB Nation and every day should be Saturday. Thanks, Orson.
My pleasure. Thanks, gentlemen.